Now I just want to, that was just an idea of some of the real criticisms that are being made of Marxism, why people, I would say 10 years ago, most people would say Marxism is an impossible philosophy, it's an impossible political theory, it's an impossible way of analysing the world. But I just want to talk now about Frederick Jameson, because he is somebody who I think is very important. He is a Marxist. He says, "I am a Marxist." But he also engages with all these philosophies and all these critiques of Marxism. And it, not to say wrong, but to really try and say, what does that mean and how does that affect Marxism? And for that reason, he adopts the idea of postmodernism. And I think Andrew this morning tried to say that postmodernism is a very difficult term, because what we're discussing has been happening for the last 200 years. But Jameson says you can use the word postmodernism. And he says that in postmodernism, history gives way to space. So time gives way to space. So we have no grand narratives. We have no idea of progress, that we're moving towards something. We're just moving around in space. There's no past, there's no present really. It's an endless present. There's no past and there's no future, really. It's, as I say, no sense of the past, just different points on a single map. And we've got, in the modern global world, we've got complexity. Very, very high levels of complexity. We've got what he calls distanciation. Things happen here that have an effect on the other side of the world. You know, if I was in Australia, I would say, think of all the things in this world, in this room, and where they all came from. But maybe they all came from China, I don't know. But the interconnections of the world is at a high level. Simultaneity, Andrew again talked about things happening at the same time. Things happening at the same time, but also in the bigger sense that an industry can organise very, very complicated products across a huge expanse of space. And we've got this idea of virtuality, which I won't explain, but I won't go into that. But so there's a whole series of new terms to describe this idea of the complex world of global capitalism, I suppose. And Jameson talks about the postmodern sublime. Now, the idea of the sublime goes back to Kant and some other theorists. And the idea, in a simple way, is that sometimes you see things and it's so amazing, it's so awe-inspiring, that your brain can't deal with it. And in those days, they talked about maybe seeing a mountain, a great mountain, the Romantics saw great mountains, and it was so awe-inspiring that it made you think of God. It made you think of God because it was so big, the individual could not understand this great thing. And Jameson talks about the postmodern sublime. When you're looking at a global system, it's so complex, so huge, it's impossible to take it in. It's impossible to really see or feel how it's all connected together. How do you give an image of globalization? How do you tell a story about globalization? Do you remember the pictures of the realists, like Repin's pictures of Russia, or Courbet's picture of France, French society? You could say, look, this is our social world. These are the classes. These are the institutions. How would you do that in this modern global world? What's the one image? The one image, one story. So Jameson's saying how people have almost become awestruck before this great complexity. And on the other side, something else has happened, is that this world, almost because it's so complex, so difficult to analyse, so lacking in one story or one image. It's become flat. We can't grasp it. It's become flat. It's become affectless, which means the best way to do it is become unemotional. Almost like Zimmel that Andrew talks about in The Big City. There's so much coming at you that it's best to go, seen it all before. So affectless, flat. Jameson talks about motion without any arrival. He uses a novel about the Vietnam War, which actually came out in the 1980s. And he uses the image of the helicopter, the American helicopters. And he says how all the way through this book, you could see the helicopters moving. And this was an image of this motion without arrival. Everything was in motion, but we never get anywhere. And of course, this is the great image of fashion. Fashion is constant change, but always the same. And for those, it's back to Baudelaire, you know. That Baudelaire's and the French modernists, modern life is about everything is different, but we're actually all, we keep coming back to the same. So Jameson's trying to, he's a Marxist, but he recognises something very fundamental has changed about the world. And his work, in my view, is an attempt to somehow try and understand that. So the film we're going to show is, in my view, an attempt to understand that postmodern sublime. It's trying to tell a story about this huge transformation of the globe in the last 30 years. But it does it not through A, B, C, D, E. It does A, F, G, B, C. It does it in a postmodern way, or attempts to do it in a postmodern way. But before I'll say a bit more about the film when I get to it, but I just want to say, just got four more slides. So for Jameson, it seems there's no outside of capitalism. And you know, as a Marxist, he's saying nobody can see outside it. And somebody else who I'll talk about, a guy called Zizek, a philosopher called Zizek, says it's easier to imagine the end of the world than it is to imagine the end of capitalism. There's no utopian thought. How can we think of the future? There's no longer any utopian thought because everything's going to always be the same. History has ended. We're just going to get more of the same. However, and this is what I think makes Jameson much more critical than many others, is that he realizes that in this world, neoliberalism, the idea of the market, becomes the only truth. In a world of where there's no history, there's no progress, there's no ideals, the market is the only truth. And one of the ways in which James approaches this is to show how the relentless logic of the market seems to work at the end of history. In 1993, Fukuyama's book on the end of history, correct me if I'm wrong. In the same year, Jacques Derrida, the philosopher, wrote a very important book called The Spectre of Marx, The Ghost of Marx. And I think it was very brave of him, because in the mid-1990s, Marx was probably at the lowest level he's ever been for 100 years. It seemed so old-fashioned, so backwards, so useless for the modern world. But Derrida says, if we get rid of Marx completely, his ghost will come back. And the ghost will come back, first of all, what can capitalism not solve? What are the problems that it's not solving? I'll talk about this in a moment. This idea of base and superstructure also, the idea that somehow there's an economic base that changes the politics and culture. Well, of course, that's stupid nonsense. Post-structuralism throws that out. And yet, what does it mean to say we are not determined by the economy, or we're not? Because it's quite clear, and Jameson's is clear, that the whole force of neoliberalism, the whole force of globalization, has completely transformed our culture in unimaginable ways. And yet, all the philosophers and the cultural theorists say, oh, there's no economic base. No, no, that's an old Marxist idea. And yet, everywhere, we can see it happening. But, Jameson says, what does it mean to understand base and superstructure after post-structuralism? And that's a question. Jameson also talks about the totality. Totality is completely rejected by post-structuralists and many, many modern thinkers. And yet, how can we not use that term? How can we not see these connections that are emerging? One of Deleuze's disciples says, you know, totality is Hegelian nonsense. We just have all these additions like a big machine. But how can we not see these internal connections between the different parts of capitalism? We need to see that, according to Jameson. So these are the sort of arguments as to why we need Marx. He might not have any solutions, but what is it to live in a world where we don't use Marxism? But I think in the last decade, and I'm talking about Europe, North America, somewhat Australia, I don't know, but actually there's been a revival of Marxism. And there's a revival of thinking about it. And this is a recent book by Eric Hobsbawm. He's now about 86 years old. And he's just written this recently. And he says, despite the datedness and mistakes of much of what Marx wrote, of course, his corpus, his work, remains a work in progress. That is, it's still with us. It can no longer be turned into dogma, but it can be studied and utilized. So, you know, to ask Marx's questions in the 21st century, even if some of the answers, disciples' answers, are rejected. So this is the question. What do we need of Marx? What use are Marx's questions in the 21st century? And many people will say, well, they're no use whatsoever. And that's a question... I'd leave with you, but many people are saying actually those questions are of use. I would say in the last 30-40 years, although politically and maybe culturally or in terms of cultural influence, Marx's theories have gone down, in terms of history and economics, I would say there's never been so much work, rich work done in this field. I think Marxist economics, or economists influenced by Marx, are absolutely, I think they're the most dynamic part of the economists' field at the moment. Same with historians. Huge amounts of work being done in Marxist history. And it's expanded enormously since the 1920s, 1930s. It does remain a presence in social and cultural theory. In many people who do cultural studies have to first say, oh, we hate the Marxists, we don't like Marxism. Well, why mention them? There's still this presence in there. But it is true that politically those ideas had really declined. But I think, just to end, I think since the global financial crisis, this is the headlines from the Times in 2008, where the front page of the Times said, he's back. And he, in this case, meaning Marx. And these are just, there's this book that's just come out by Terry Eagleton, Why Marx Was Right. I've not read it. There's Eric Hobsbawm's book, which caused a lot of controversy among many people in much of the Australian press. All the reviewers said, how can he talk about Marx? What about Stalin? What about the What about the destruction of the peasantry? It's almost like, how dare you speak about Marx? And yet, it becomes a very popular book. This is, you don't have to read this. When I was searching for Googling Jack Derrida today in the office, I came across this, and this is today's newspaper, and it was amazing. It's, you know, I was just doing this PowerPoint, and it comes up, and it says, yes, he's back, and it talks about how, just the last line, say, almost 130 years after his death, is Marx acquiring sharp contours again? Is he becoming, he's no longer a ghost, but actually, maybe he's come back. And even people like George Soros and other financial people are beginning to take note of, well, maybe he did have something. So that was just a chance encounter. And of course, there's a, going to finish now, there's Zizek's book, Living in the End Times. And I looked in, as you can see, this is from Amazon. So I looked inside and I found these two quotes. And he says, there should no longer be any doubt. Global capitalism is approaching its terminal crisis. And he says, what can capitalism not solve? The ecological crisis, the imbalances of the economic system, what he calls the biogenetic revolution. There's a whole revolution in biology, in genes, and yet it's running into crisis. And the exploding social divisions and ruptures. These are the contradictions that capitalism is not solving. And he says, they're back, and we must find a way to do it, to solve it. But he does say, even though we know these are problems, nobody, the allegiance of people to the current system is still very strong. And he says that this is, it corresponds to the stages of grief. You know, when somebody we love dies, we go through four stages, which is denial, denial, anger, anger and bargaining, depression, and withdrawal. It's these stages of grief. And he says, well, you know, maybe we're at the zero point, and maybe we can think of a new beginning. And he quotes Mao here, you know, there's great disorder under heaven, the situation is excellent. You know, and I suppose we're back to crisis and opportunity. So, anyway, this is just from Zizek's book. Just to say that the questions that Marx asked are very strongly back on the agenda. Now, what we do with that Marx, what kind of Marx, who's Marx, what parts of Marxism, is a question, well, some of you in this audience can ask. But that sort of systematic critique of the system we're in is, as I say, is very much back on the agenda.